Here at Early Excellence, we specialise in early childhood education. We offer expert advice and guidance through training, consultancy and classroom design. With the Early Excellence podcast, we aim to inspire and support you as well as challenge your thinking. So if that's what you're looking for, you've come to the right place. Hello everybody, Andy Burt here. Welcome along to episode 190 of the Early Excellence podcast. In this week's episode, we're joined by Rebecca Mottram. Now, Rebecca is a children's nurse and potty learning expert. She joins us to talk about potty training and shares valuable advice for teachers, practitioners and parents. So here you go. Here's my Early Excellence podcast chat with Rebecca Mottram. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. Yes, lovely sunny day.
Very nice sunny day. Cold, frosty, but bright and sunny. Thank you very much for joining us for the podcast today. I'm really interested to chat to you. Your work, I think, is really interesting and something that I think early as teachers and early as practitioners will find interesting and I think very useful as well. You've written widely on potty training and advice in terms of potty training. And so it's very, I think, in terms of early years practice, something that is very of the moment. I'm sure lots of early years teachers and practitioners are kind of grappling with issues around potty training and so on. So we've got a lot that we can cover. I thought we'd start, if that's all right, with a way in, which is, I wondered at what point you got interested in potty training for young children. Was there a particular point in that? Has it always been part of your interest or is it something that has developed over time?
You know what? I've always had a really scatological sense of humour. I can remember when I was younger, me and my sister used to write these letters about poos appearing in the wrong place and it was hilarious. So I think I'd like to say, oh, it's always been part of my thing, but actually, in truth, it hasn't. Even when I was training as a children's nurse, we didn't actually cover potty training as part of that. So it really happened after I had my own children. And well, actually, kind of before that, because when I was pregnant with my first child, I was attending an antenatal class and someone just casually said about, you know, supplies. And they said, oh, of course, you know, in China, babies don't wear nappies. And it really caught my attention because I couldn't understand how you could have a baby without a nappy. It was just such an alien concept. So, you know, I started looking into it from there because I wanted the answer. You know, I was intrigued by that. And I kind of found out that a lot of places in the world actually approach potty training so, so differently to how we do. So I think that was my first kind of what's going on here kind of moment where I started thinking more critically about it and trying to find out what was going on. So yeah, it was, I suppose, having my own baby that really got me going.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. So when you talk about different parts of the world, they're not kind of having nappies and using nappies. What do they do? You know, how does that work?
Well, this is exactly what I was thinking and wanted to find out. And so, I mean, a quick Google search was quite enlightening, but it was something I'd never done before. So I had no idea. It was like a whole new world opened up. And I mean, what I found out is that lots of places in the world don't have access to disposable nappies or they can't afford them, or they're just not within their repertoire of parenting tools. They're not something that parents expect to use. And they're not normal in some cultures, in many cultures, actually. Cloth nappies are still the norm. And when I say cloth nappies, it can literally just be a bit of cloth that's kind of tied around with a belt. And so I started thinking, well, that's interesting. What do they do when their children, you know, really have explosive poo, for example? But we've all been there with those moments where the unexpected happens and it creates a huge mess. And then I read a bit more and found out that actually they were all not expecting their children to use these nappies particularly. They were there as a kind of backup rather than, I think, what we could say a sort of portable toilet, which might be a way of kind of describing nappies that we use, because they're designed to completely encapsulate everything that comes out and keep it there until we can change them and clean them up. In many places around the world, that is just not the expectation. The expectation is that the parent will pick up on the cues and the signals that their child is needing to go, and they will then hold them over a sort of designated receptacle, perhaps over the dirt, if they're living in a sort of what we might call intact community, where, you know, they don't have all the sanitation facilities that we do. So there are many different ways of doing it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Is that literally because they can't afford or don't have access to nappies? And it isn't always. It's actually a kind of choice around how they manage hygiene. And there, it's also, I think, more interestingly, a choice around their expectations for learning for children, that they're just very, very different. And so I think that the differences in the practice really resemble the differences in the mindset in terms of how we're approaching this skill and this milestone and this kind of human need and how we're meeting that need.
It is really interesting. And so are you saying then, from what you found out, that at one time, because I'm thinking back to, you know, when I was a child, it was cloth nappies. You know, we did use cloth nappies. I was a child of the 70s, and it was definitely sort of terry toweling nappies were the thing that parents used.
Absolutely.
Was there less of a difference there then, sort of in the 1960s and 70s, between what you're saying for parts of the world and the Western part of the world? Are we saying that actually the difference was less at that point?
Well, it's just so good because you're literally asking all the questions that I asked myself. Because I was like, well, hang on a minute. I remember my mum talking about nappies, and I actually remember helping my mum to wash my sister's nappies. So I had this memory of terry toweling. I was like, well, hang on a minute. So what did we used to do this as well? And I discovered that actually before even, you know, you go right back in the history books, that, you know, nappies are a relatively modern invention, actually. You know, I mean, certainly hunter-gatherers didn't use them. They used moss and things like that. And they didn't, again, they had different expectation. And then fast forwarding right forward to the 1970s that we remember, most children were potty trained. Over 97% of children were potty trained by 18 months, which seems incredibly early to us now. But actually at the time, that was very normal. And that was because parents were just absolutely sick and tired of washing nappies, and they just desperately wanted their children to start using the potty. And so, again, the expectations and the learning journey was very different because people started much earlier.
Yes. And you can see why as well. You know, if you think you have that memory of kind of helping wash your siblings' nappies, I can certainly remember buckets of nappies. I have a younger brother who was 3 years younger than me, and I can certainly remember my early memories of kind of there being buckets of nappies around, which is fairly gross, isn't it? When you think about that now.
Everyone was happy when they disappeared. And so I suppose, you know, the next logical question is, well, what happened then in the 70s? And it was the advent and the development of disposable nappies that really changed both our habits and our expectations. So, and, you know, I had a slightly cynical kind of mindset sometimes when it comes to these things. So I thought, developing nappies, what happened there then? And I looked into the development. And at first, when disposable nappies were invented, they were not this brilliant machine or product that they are today. They were, in fact, quite useless by all accounts. And parents didn't like them. And they rejected them. Especially in America, where they were initially launched in North America, parents rejected them so much that they had to really work hard to develop something that would be more acceptable. And at the same time, they wanted to reassure parents that it was okay to kind of wait until their child was a bit older before they expected them to be out of nappies. So they had this big message about, you know, wait till your child is ready. And this is where the readiness message came from. So what they were actually saying was, wait till your child is maybe 6 months and then before you begin. And then once they're sort of 12 to 18 months, basically once they can walk, that's the time that you should really think about stopping using nappies. But, you know, then they said, well, here's a kind of pull up as well that's going to help you to make that process more gradual, because we think it's, you know, hard for children to learn it like in a few days or whatever. So we're giving you the product that's going to enable you to do it slower and more gradually and a bit later. So by later, I really mean sort of 18 months. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I remember my mother saying that she'd taken my sister to a playgroup once, and my sister could walk, but she was wearing a nappy because she was really unwell that day. And I think she had diarrhea or something. And the other parents were like, are you okay? Like, do you need help with potty training? Because we noticed that your child is still wearing nappies, but they can walk. So do you want us to help you? And my mum was like, no, it's fine. She's just poorly today. But there was a completely different expectation. Like, a child who's walking and wearing nappies, is everything okay?
That is an interesting kind of milestone, isn't it? That when they walk, that actually they should be using the toilet or a potty.
100%. And that's...
Yeah, actually, that's way, way ahead of where we are at now, isn't it? With many, many children. Way ahead.
And I think that, you know, the worry about doing it before children could walk was that they weren't developmentally ready to be able to manage that process on their own. So be able to understand what their body is telling them and then get to the potty on time, because maybe they couldn't walk yet and they just didn't have the capability to be able to do it independently. And so we got this whole message of like, wait till they're a bit older, wait till they're developmentally ready, and there's no harm in doing that. But I think that what's happened between that point in the 70s where they then said, and here's a disposable nappy to help you so that you're not washing terriers for so long, so we're going to make this easier for you. I think the combination of those things have kind of developed into what is now quite a distorted message. So the original message was, you know, we're not saying do it late as in age 3, 4. We're saying do it late as in once they can walk. But that message has become so distorted. And I think that, you know, this idea of readiness has been pushed back and back and back until children are kind of 3. And at the same time, disposable nappies have become so sophisticated and so cheap and available and so normal that we've really lost sight of what children need developmentally and what they actually need for their health in terms of their bowel and bladder health. And so once I'd kind of got the picture of what had happened here, I thought, well, hang on a minute, what does the research say about this? Because, you know, my specialty of clinical practice is research nursing for children. So looking at the evidence base, and you know, I'm sure that any nurse or early years practitioner listening to this will understand the importance of knowing why you're giving the advice that you're giving. You know, what is this based on? How do we know that we're right if we're going to advise parents or, you know, health professionals or whatever? And so I started looking into the research around potty training and developmental readiness and all of the stuff around hygiene and bowel and bladder outcomes. And I was just shocked. I was so shocked because what I realized is that the evidence is very clear that early potty training, starting from around 6 months and finishing before the child is 3, is absolutely the healthiest and most developmentally appropriate way to approach this milestone. And so I really thought, wow, there's such a big difference here between what the research is telling us, that, for example, even a newborn baby is aware when they're weeing and pooing. They know what's going on. We can see in their brains monitoring them that they actually are connecting with that part of their body and they are feeling those sensations and they are having some kind of choice and control and awareness of that. So that's a full-term newborn baby. And yet, you know, the rhetoric tends to be that they can't understand what they're doing, they don't feel it, and they couldn't therefore possibly understand how to use a potty before that has completely developed. So, you know, it's very different. There's a big mismatch between what we understand in the science and the research and what we're doing in practice.
Absolutely. And I think it also, even in my time of working in early year settings, I think I've seen a change. That when I first started teaching in the early years, which was, 25, nearly 30 years ago, I can remember my first job was in a nursery, working with one particular 3-year-old child, one-to-one support. And I can remember from having conversations with other members of staff that they were quite clear in terms of their work with parents, that they said that basically at 3, your child should be out of nappies, and ideally they need to be out of nappies before they come to nursery. And practically that makes sense, of course, because when you've got that many children, you can't really, as a teacher or practitioner, be spending such a lot of time changing nappies. It's taking you out of the equation in terms of doing all of the other important things that you are doing. And not that changing nappies isn't important, but you see what I mean? And yet, actually, over time, that has changed, hasn't it? That we are now seeing more and more children coming into nurseries and potentially into reception classes actually still.
I think that there you're really touching on a very topical debate, which is kind of saying, well, why is it so important to be early? Wouldn't it just be easier if we just let them use nappies and then instead we put resources into earlier settings to support that? We don't expect them to be potty trained before they necessarily reach school, and therefore we need to extend our provision to include that, because parents are working, they're very busy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And there is a lot of conversations around that question. My answer to that question, again, comes back to the research that we know that children who potty train after the age of three are at an increased risk of developing bowel and bladder issues. But, you know, and some of these issues can extend into childhood. I mean, for example, we know that one in three children now of primary school age are constipated. And that's a huge, you know, we're talking 900,000 children or more at the last estimate in the UK. And that is a grave risk for their bowel health, because having constipation long term can actually damage the bowel very significantly. We know that children potty trained after three tend to have more wetting accidents. And, you know, when children report the experience of having a wetting accident at school, it's extremely distressing for them. That, you know, there was one study, which is a bit of an outlier, but it said that children would say that having a wetting accident at school was only the second best thing after going blind. You know, so the children's experience of this social thing is extremely difficult for them. But I think that the physical health as well, and just the difficulty, like you've said, about early years workers and primary school teachers having to try and manage this. And I think, you know, altogether, we do need to think about what is best for their physical health, for their social engagement and their you know, their social health, and what's going to be good for these settings. So it's not really good enough to say, oh, it doesn't matter, just wait till they're older, because we are creating problems for ourselves that will be much harder to solve in the long run than if we simply say, actually, we just need to think quite differently about how we approach this milestone, how we support children with their learning, and, you know, our expectations for what they can achieve. I think that's the change that's going to be easier to make, in a way, although that is also difficult.
Yeah. But I also think that idea of having a child in a nappy, where the nappy is drawing away the moisture from their bodies, and they are now much more comfortable, aren't they, because of that?
Yeah.
That's a very different thing to what, you know, I was talking about just a few minutes ago, those kind of old sort of terry toweling nappies, where actually if a child was wet or damp, they knew about it, and the nappy was heavy and cumbersome and so on, and it was just uncomfortable. You can see a difference there, can't you, I think, between the two approaches.
Definitely. This is like 100% why we also need to think about it, because, you know, the nappies now, they are such a brilliant invention. Actually, I mean, they've got to be one of the most successful parenting tools that's ever been invented in terms of convenience and cost and hygiene. You know, hygiene, maybe not 100%, because actually children who wear nappies for longer are at also an increased risk of having bladder infections, for example, because they do keep all the bacteria and everything in a warm, moist environment. But, you know, I think I always think, okay, well, what are the key skills that you have to develop to be able to stop using nappies and not just have accidents all the time? And they boil down to two things. One is that you understand what your body is telling you and the signals it's giving you. And you know, then when you get the sensation, that means I'm bladder is filling, or I can feel that I need to poo. So that's the first thing, is what I call body awareness. The second thing is that you understand that these things need to happen in a socially designated place, i.e. the bathroom or the toileting area. So it's not wherever you're playing. It's like you have to actually be able to go to that place and use it there, because that's never going to change. You know, we're never going to have a culture wherein it's okay to just squat and go wherever you are, right? We all have to learn that skill. And the problem with disposable nap is that, first of all, like you said, they feel instantly dry when you're wet, so they're not giving them that body feedback that the older cloth nappies and terry toweling nappies used to do. So gradually we are eroding that sense of awareness that children are born with, you know, of being able to understand what their body is telling them. And then secondly, when they do the wee or the poo, it isn't in the socially designated area. So they don't have to stop what they're doing and go there. They can literally be playing on the floor, sitting on grandma's knee, crossing the road, and they've got their little portable toilet on them. So again, we're not giving them the opportunity to develop that skill of kind of not only seeing what my body is doing, but also knowing that I now need to develop the self-discipline to stop my play and go to that place in order to manage that. And so disposable nappies in the fact that they can be worn for so many hours before they need to be changed, that they instantly feel dry, they really are interfering with the development of those skills. So, I mean, let me be clear that I'm absolutely not saying we shouldn't use nappies, because I think that that is unrealistic. But I think it's about the way, you know, the way that we do other things as well as using nappies. So we're not just relying on the nappy to tick that box and doing absolutely nothing to develop those other skills that they need.
No, absolutely. It is interesting, isn't it, that for pretty much everything else in terms of child development, we talk about developmental stages. So we talk about the developmental stages of talking, from those kind of early sounds and babbling and stringing sounds together and copying and all of those things that young children will do. In terms of learning to walk, we talk about all of those physical steps of moving and crawling and cruising and picking themselves up onto, you know, and pulling themselves up on furniture and all of those developmental steps and stages. With learning to use the toilet or the potty, there is basically you're in a nappy or you're out of a nappy. But there are the two things. When actually, from what you're saying, actually you're saying we need to be far better at understanding the developmental stages of going through that process.
We really do.
Is that right?
Yeah, because, you know, when I, again, going back to the research and the evidence, I counted 40 separate skills that are required for a child to be able to successfully use the potty and stay clean and dry throughout the day. 40 different skills. And some of those skills are social, some of them are physical, some of them are cognitive, you know, that we understand what needs to happen and how we do it, that it actually encompasses all elements of the EYFS. So, you know, if we were comparing the skills of potty training to, say, the skill of walking or talking, they're actually quite comparable in terms of their complexity. You know, I mean, like you said, think about learning to walk, that holding your head up is one of the first things because it's developing that motor strength. And then, you know, you've got all these other stages between that and being able to cruise and walk. And actually, potty training is quite similar if you map it out, that you can see sort of between 0 and 6 months, 6 to 12 months, 12 to 18 months, 18 to 24, and so on. You can actually map the skill development according to the kind of age that they are in terms of what you might realistically expect. So it's absolutely not saying that a child of 6 months old is going to be able to pipe up and say, excuse me, I need a wee, can you, you know, help me to the potty? But it's setting realistic expectations. So for example, between the age of 0 to 6 months, you can learn when, you know, everybody knows what that poo face looks like in their child, every single parent, right? And so if you see that, you can think, okay, I have a choice now. If it's convenient to me, I could take their nappy off and I could hold them or gently rest them over the potty, and they could learn what it feels like to do that poo, not into the nappy, which is a very different sensory experience. And then they could then get some exposure to what that is like. So just periodically. And then perhaps once they're sort of 6 to 12 months, they can sit up on it without you holding them. So they can learn how it feels to sit and defecate in that position. Again, they're also getting familiarity with the potty, and they're seeing that then that poo goes and flushes down the toilet and so on. So they're learning some of the social stuff. Perhaps, you know, once they're sort of 12 to 18 months, that they're learning that they're actually starting to say the words, for example, like potty, toilet, they know what it's for. And so you're building that into their daily, or at least, you know, semi-daily experience. And so you're building those skills, just like you might give a child a spoon and for the first 6 months, they just chuck it on the floor. But you know that eventually they're going to get food on it, and that's not going to go in your hair. It's going to go in their mouth, because they need all this practice, don't they? They need so much practice to be able to master those simple things. And it's actually exactly the same with potty learning. So it's about using nappies, but it's about also helping them to develop these other skills so that by the time they are 18 months, you know, stopping using nappies becomes another step in that journey. And it becomes towards the end of that journey rather than the very first step, right, we're going to take the nappies away and we're just going to hope for the best, which is actually the beginning of where potty training goes so wrong for so many parents. And it becomes so stressful and difficult for the child as well, because when you do it that way, you're essentially asking them to condense, you know, 18 months worth of learning into a few days, and you're expecting them to get it right. So it's kind of like saying, I'm going to strap you into a device until I know that you can walk. And then when I take you out, I'm going to expect you to just walk straight away without ever falling over. Or like, you know, like having a driving test before you've had any lessons. It's not the way that we approach learning, is it? So
it's not what we do for anything else, is it? That's the interesting thing. Yeah.
We need to change.
It is really interesting. And presumably, and I would have thought as well, there maybe have been societal changes over time and how we view what it, you know, that kind of, maybe there is a sort of a maybe we feel uncomfortable about talking about using the toilet and potty training and poo and wee and all of those sorts of things. And therefore we've ended up with that, this model of basically, let's not talk about it. Let's just have our children in nappies.
Very British, isn't it? That we.
It is very British. Oh. Yes, it is. I think there are two things that strike me about this. I think, first of all, we're talking about if this was going to change, we're talking about a huge change, aren't we? That actually this is about how, you know, when we think about parenting, we often parent in the way that we were parented. That's how we've learned to parent, isn't it? And that actually expectations carry on from one generation to another. And that actually that's going to need a serious change if actually that message kind of really gets, in order for it to really get out there, it strikes me.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, when I was writing my 3-step go potty method, I was really, you know, I was looking at the research and, you know, this took me 10 years to develop this, because it was looking at the research, but it was also thinking about how to make it accessible to parents in the modern age, because not only make it make sense, as in logically this makes sense, which I think it absolutely does, but how can we actually do this in a way that's going to feel supportive of parents and early years people rather than, you know, just another thing that they have to try and add on to their already very, very, very busy and difficult kind of parenting. I think the way in is that these days our ethos of parenting trends towards, you know, seeing our children as, you know, wanting independence, needing that kind of consensual way of working with them, where we're treating them with respect. We are aware of their developmental stages and aware of what they're capable of. And I think the other thing is play. You know, we absolutely love teaching children through play. And I think almost any professional working in the early years now will absolutely understand the importance of play and how we can use that for learning. And it's not just, you know, children wasting time. They are actually learning all the time when they're playing. And so I kind of thought, right, well, that's the way to do it. We need to make this learning journey quite playful. And thankfully, due to my very scatologically humoured childhood, I could remember lots of the ways in which, you know, me and my sister would make up stories and play around poo. And it was all a bit risque, because it was, you know, it was poo. And, you know, I remember we had a little doll's house toilet, and we used to put some of that, you remember, Apri facial scrub? I think it was like this kind of, and it looked exactly like poo. And we used to have this game where we'd put a little bit of it in and then be like, oh no, look, there's a poo in the toilet. And it was so funny. So I kind of thought, right, I need to go back to that time. And that's where I invented this story of, you know, how we can see Pooh as a character of Mr. Pooh and Mrs. Wee, and how we can use that to playfully teach our children about, you know, where Pooh needs to go and how we need to manage this bit of being human. And it lends itself to so much play and humour that I absolutely thought, well, this is the way in for me. So, you know, I started trying some of these things out with my kids. I went to local primary schools. I tried it out with them and they absolutely loved it. And I thought, this is the way to teach. So things like making poo dough, you know, talking about it, getting it out in the open, you know, having a little snigger like, she said poo and she's a grown up. that's the way in, because it becomes lighthearted and funny. But at the same time, you can teach them, yeah, you know, this is where poo belongs. He, you know, wants to go down the toilet because that's where his home is and his friends and family are and all that. So we have to try and help him get there. So, you know, this concept of poo goes to poo land, which I didn't invent, but, you know, the concept there, we can build on that idea and put it into a kind of learning framework. And that's really a big part of the method that I include in my book, because I want to make it accessible to everybody who, you know, might struggle with those conversations and kind of normalizing this, because we are a bit British, aren't we? So
we are definitely, which also brings us on to then key advice for early years teachers and practitioners are, you know, obviously, we're talking about big changes, aren't we? The issues over time from using nappies and so on, and how actually, you know, we're getting later and later in terms of children being potty trained. And it's absolutely right and important that we talk about that, but it doesn't solve that issue of right now. You've got early years teachers with so many children in nappies, and they're trying to work with parents to support them. Meanwhile, they're trying to support the child in terms of recognizing those steps or recognizing going to the toilet and, you know, with those small steps towards it. So top tips or advice, what would be the key advice?
I mean, I think we all have to work together on this. We know we need to, you know, people in early years settings and health professionals are seen by parents as authoritative sources of information. So we need to know what we're talking about. We need to know that earlier potty training is best for health, is best for development. And we need to come up with some ideas about how we can do that in our settings so that we're showing parents the good example and we're giving them access to the right information and support and advice. So we're not perpetuating myths about children needing to be ready and all that stuff. I think, you know, settings that I've worked with, it has been a big game changer to simply help them to understand, you know, some of the stuff we've been talking about today. And I think that's the beginning, you know, is get your setting to, you know, have this conversation around, you know, the history and where we've got to and where we are today. So that when they're talking to parents, you know, if parents say, well, I'm just not sure if they're really ready, you can say, actually, children are ready to develop these skills. And this is how we might be able to do it for your child. So, for, you know, for example, if your child is 6 months old, then they're coming into that setting. Perhaps when you do the nappy change, which you're going to do in that designated space, you also have a potty in there. If you see that perhaps, you know, they need a poo or they've woken up from a nap, for example, and that's a good time to go and take them and sit them on the potty, because we generally do tend to wee after we've woken up, then, you know, you start incorporating those what we might call potty tunities into some of the daily rhythm. And we say to parents, you know, if you see that poo face, it's absolutely safe and really good idea to sit your baby on the potty and help them do it there. So we're starting early to develop these skills. We're also things like what I would absolutely love to see, big change that I would love to see, is instead of when you change that nappy, rolling that poo up into the nappy and putting that in the bin, I would love to see early years workers tipping that poo into the toilet and flushing it away and helping children to see that that is where poo goes. Because actually, that's what we're supposed to do anyway, in terms of our environmental waste. We are supposed to take the poo out and flush it away. So even that tiny change would help children to learn, oh, okay, this is, I've seen it, I know where it goes. And you know, children can get involved in helping to flush that away. You're teaching them some of those skills around how to actually use the toilet. And then perhaps, you know, we can go back to the times when children did go potty, to use the potty in small groups, or, you know, even they used to do it en masse, didn't they? You see these pictures of them lined up. And I mean, I don't know quite whether that fits with the settings in terms of the environment now, but, you know, taking them in small groups, having that peer to support, taking them maybe after meals, okay, or before we go to sleep for these sits. And if they use it, great. If they don't, okay. But you're exposing them to those rhythms, that normality. So we're basically not ignoring it. And this is not about making more work for earlier settings. It's about thinking about your setting and what you might be able to do towards this. And that might look very different from one setting to another, but it's sort of looking at those 40 skills, which, you know, if you go on my website, you can download those 40 skills, or they're also in my book. And then as an early years provider, thinking, okay, how might our setting help support this? And it might only be initially that you start giving parents slightly different messages around this, you know, and it might take a long time to actually factor in the practicalities of trying to change this culture. But I think it, you might have to be a bit creative at the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. No, sure. I think you're absolutely right, though, in terms of routines. I think those sort of regular routines of taking to the children to the toilet, to either use the potty or to use the toilet. Yes, you're not going to get that right every time. And yes, it's, you know, they won't always need to go at that moment. But if you then celebrate the moments when you do get it right and it does happen, actually, you're more likely to get into that routine and the child knows and expects that that's going to happen at that point. It's that building it in. Whereas I think when they're just wearing a nappy and we change the nappy, there's not a sort of a step there, is there? We're not moving forward with it.
100%. We're just kind of dealing with it and sort of kicking it into the long grass until they're toddlers, when they're going to be potentially more oppositional because they're seeking that independence. And so, you know, we need to get in before that to start to normalize these things so that they're not something to be afraid of, for example. I think the other thing that early years settings and anyone who ever changes a nappy needs to do is understand what childhood constipation looks like. Not having a poo every day, major red flag. Having poo that's hard or cracked or, you know, little rabbit droppings, major red flag. Because a lot of the time these symptoms of constipation are going missed. And then actually what we do know is that if the child is approaching stopping using nappies and they have constipation, it is a very big risk factor for potty training going wrong, because they're coming to it with already not the optimum bowel health. And that can create fear and anxiety and all that stuff. So I think, you know, early years workers looking at the list of constipation signs and symptoms and knowing what that is, so that if they see any of those, they can say, hey, mom, dad, by the way, I've noticed this today. I think this is something that we should look at. And knowing that, you know, where to send them on for really good information about that, to go and see their GP to try and resolve that so that we're not ignoring it. And also when they do come to the milestone of stopping using nappies, that they're not bringing to it that burden, because that is a very big reason why it goes wrong. And then we think, oh, we'll just wait a bit longer, but we're not solving the underlying reason why it went wrong. So, you know, given that one in three children are constipated, this is a national crisis, you know, that we absolutely have to know what to look for and what to do about it. So, yeah, I know that's kind of an extra tip, but I think it's so important to solve this problem.
It is very important. It strikes me as well that there's such a lot of anxiety bound up in a lot of this, isn't there? That actually toilet training for young children and for parents, I think it brings quite a lot of anxiety and stress for both groups, really. Going back to what you were saying before about that poo and wee and using the toilet and so on often comes up in children's play. I think that is because actually it's something that they are kind of very aware of in terms of the stress of it and the kind of the discomfort of it or the insecurity of it and so on. You know, they're playing about with insecurities and kind of seeing how they feel about it. I think there's a lot of that comes through in their play quite often. Yeah, no, it's interesting.
You know, this is a chance for us as well to perhaps address some of our social neuroses around this and just be like, well, you know, everyone does poo and it's completely normal and we don't need to be ashamed or embarrassed about that. And we don't need to pass that shame and embarrassment onto our children. So, you know, something as simple as having an open door policy on your bathroom at home can be, for many families, a really good way to kind of try and allow your children to see this as a completely normal thing that we're not embarrassed about. And so it's little things like that and making jokes about it, talking about Mr. Pooh, making poo dough, it all helps to ease those conversations into something that everyone can have a bit of a laugh about whilst they also feel a bit embarrassed, but it can really help get over that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Rebecca, you mentioned your book, and I'm sure people listening to this will be very, very interested. First of all, in going on your website to find out more about your work, but also about your book as well. Tell us about your book.
So I do have it here. It's my one and only copy right now. So it is available on pre-order and it will be officially out in January 2026. So this book, I would say, I'm so proud of this book, but I think also because it's the first book on potty training that is really informed by the science and the evidence. You know, so I feel happy to stand behind it as a nurse and say, you know, yeah, this is good advice for parents and early years workers. And it's very funny, you know, I mean, Mr. Pooh and Mrs. Wee are on the back of it.
There they are.
So those guys are in there. They're good friends of mine. I hope that they will be good friends of everybody who reads that book. And I am very excited about being able to give this to the community and of people who need it.
Well, there's definitely a need there. Without a doubt, there is definitely a need there. And I'm sure people will be very interested in that. Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast. It's been really, really interesting to talk to you.
You're welcome.
Really interesting. Thank you.
Thanks.
So there you go. Thank you very much to Rebecca for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast. Really interesting conversation. Now, what we've done is we've put information so you can find out more about Rebecca's work, including a link to her website. We've put that in the podcast notes and also a link to find out more about her book as well, Positively Potty. Okay, that is about it for this week, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us, and take care and have a good week. We'll see you next time.